Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who brings a lot of intelligence to bear on public policy issues is the executive director of the American Security Institute. His name is Richard Berman. We've talked with him in the past about a project that I'm very keen on, namely China Owns Us. Time for an update on that. And he has a new initiative on another very, very troubling public policy challenge, censorship. And it's good to have a chance to catch up with him on both. Rick, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thanks so much, Frank. Good to be with you.
So give us the latest. It seems as though China owns more and more of us with each passing day. We'll be talking about it in the course of this program with several of our guests in ways that are really quite insidious. In fact, one of them suggests it actually constitutes war. And yet we seem to be the great enablers of much of it.
Yeah, you know, the thing about China is that they are attacking the United States in so many different ways and in such an insidious way that it's easy to put it all into the category of this has never happened before. There's no precedent for this in world politics. Whether it is their control of our medicine, the amount of food they import into this country, financial situations, their ability to literally change the way we think about China. They have suppressed movies that would have an anti-China bent to them. They control TV and radio in some markets. I don't mean they have a monopoly, but they do have access to the airwaves. They do all sorts of things that change the way we think about them. They're into universities. They're into grade schools with little propaganda outlets.
Influence operations on a grand scale.
Totally. But it's very strategic, and they've got their fingers into so many parts of our country in ways that go from high technology to culture. And you can see a lot of it at that website, ChinaOwnsUs.com. And quite frankly, there's a lot of information there that I can't possibly get into. But one thing that we just put up on the site just a couple of days ago is a map that shows all the different ways that China is getting into the U.S., from buying up companies to controlling movie theaters, et cetera. It's worth a look.
Yeah, well, it's unrestricted warfare, I think, is what they call it. And whether it's on the economic side or whether it's, as you say, propaganda, influence operations, buying politicians, including, it appears, the President of the United States. It's insidious in the extreme. And Rick Berman, as you map this, the question, I guess, really occurs, to what extent are Wall Street financiers and other business leaders enabling much of what's happening in this regard by essentially underwriting it and with our money in many cases?
Yeah, well, you know, we let these Chinese companies that are definitely connected to the Chinese Communist Party, you know, there's no bright line between the government and private businesses in China. They're one and the same.
There's a direct line, I think it is, in most cases.
Yeah. And so now a lot of these so-called Chinese companies are listed on American stock exchanges. And when they list them there, then you have some of these investment banks in the United States willing to put pension fund money and other investments into some of these companies. And then these companies are connected to the Chinese military.
In many cases, that civil military fusion problem. And what you're trying to do with China Owns Us is a corrective to all of that, right?
Well, you know, if the public is not aware of the details, then they're never going to get angry and quite frankly, legitimately fearful. And if that's not the case, they're never going to ask and pressure the political establishment to do something about this. We could make some significant changes, but we don't because the public is unaware and therefore complacent.
And China continues to own us. Well, thank you for the work you're doing on this. It's important. We're hopeful that it will succeed. And it certainly complements a lot of work that we're doing at the Committee on the Present Danger of China and here on this program and elsewhere. Let me turn to another new initiative that you're engaged in, Rick, at the American Security Initiative. The censorship problem that we are now experiencing, particularly at the hands of big tech, but it's also manifesting itself, as again, we'll be talking about throughout the program, in corporate boardrooms across this country beyond big tech is a huge problem as well. Talk about what you are up to with your Challenge Censorship.org initiative.
Well, you know, the highlight of what we're up to can probably be best seen through what happened to Parler, which is the app that was allowing people to speak to each other in much the same way that Twitter does. And in one weekend, you had Google, Apple, and Amazon all gang up on this small company, Parler, and literally kick them off the internet. And they did it for reasons that are ridiculous.
Actually, take the company down effectively, right?
Exactly. And to some degree, it was initiated by Sheryl Sandberg over at Facebook. But the reasoning doesn't matter as to how they did it. The fact is that they did it. If you want to say they did it by coincidence all at the same time over a weekend, you know, I've got the bridge to sell you. This was obviously a coordinated effort, and they were able to censor all the 15 million people that were using that site to speak with each other. And this was not a site that was guilty of initiating riots at the Capitol, et cetera, which were some of the early criticisms. That was totally untrue. And now you have companies, as you rightly point out, Frank, who are in their own way trying to censor, in this particular case, the Georgia State Legislature for changing the law in their state. And quite frankly, I think that the federal government, you know, the federal government does not have the right to censor speech under the First Amendment. But there's something to be said for the fact that the government has a way to pressure private companies who now have ability to censor other people. You know, you have to ask yourself when Google decided to censor Parler, were they somehow doing this in concert with a wink and a nod from the federal government that doesn't have the right to censor them, but these private companies could?
It's kind of a fascistic relationship, isn't it? That the corporations are either just so closely aligned with the government or doing its bidding that it amounts to an extension of the interests of the political class in the state. And so very quickly, what are you trying to do about this, Rick, at ChallengeCensorship.com?
Most of my activity on the internet, I am trying to inform people. Everybody's busy. Everybody has their own personal issues. And quite frankly, unless you bring the specifics of what's going on to people, unless you get people to understand that there are personal consequences from some of this that is taking place at a higher level than they normally think about, we never get pressure on our political establishment to affect change. And so I am trying to inform people so that they will act.
Let us hope that you succeed. We're happy to help amplify that important message. And I encourage people to check out challengecensorship.com. Rick, thanks for these updates. Come back to us again, if you would, with further ones as things progress. Next up, we'll speak with Bill Walton about John Boehner's new book and what it says about conservatism and our country and more. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and one of the highlights of our week is the chance to visit with Bill Walton. He is the driving force behind a terrific podcast television program called The Bill Walton Show. He's a very accomplished financier in Wall Street in a previous life, and these days, a leading conservative who is the president of a terrific organization I'm proud to be a member of, the Council for National Policy. Bill, good to have you back. Welcome.
Hey, Frank. Great talking with you.
I want to do an update with you as a former master of the universe on Wall Street about what's going on with woke capital and the implications of it, notably as these folks are becoming more and more aggressive in trying to impact public policy in ways that are, well, decidedly unconservative, but also arguably contrary to the best interest of our constitutional republic. Talk a little bit about specifically Georgia and what's happening there, if you would, as a microcosm of a larger problem.
The history of the big business and its relationship with Republicans, everybody thinks that's the story. Well, that's no longer the story. Big business is now firmly in the Democrat camp and more to the point, firmly in the woke camp. And I think it's been widely reported last week or thereabouts, they came down against the Georgia passing its voting rights legislation, which had some really onerous restrictions like requiring a voter ID and condemned by Delta Airlines CEO. And of course, Delta Airlines is not going to let you on the plane without a photo ID. But this is a much bigger issue. There are about 100 CEOs that were convened over the weekend on a Zoom call. They're pulled together by Jeffrey Sonnenfeld of Yale School of Management, which is firmly on the left. And they all were agreeing to sign a statement coming out against voter suppression. What they're doing with this is they're conflating the voter ID law, which Georgia passed, and also which H.R. 1 would prevent. They're conflating those two issues, and they're basically saying these voter restrictions, or they're calling them voter restrictions, are racist and discriminatory. I think they're going to pay a price because, remember, we have 75 million people who voted for Donald Trump, maybe more, and these people buy stuff, and I think we're at the beginning maybe of a boycott corporate America movement, which I would be happy to be part of.
Jim Crow is the shorthand for it. And H.R. 1, of course, is going to actually be adulterating the voting process in a way that the Georgia bill is intended to try to rectify, after all. And it's really...
Well, big business has got a big public relations problem right now, in my view. I mean, I'm a recovering CEO, and just this week, they reported that the 332 largest companies headquartered in America had an average CEO pay of $13.7 million. And that's up 100% since in the last 10 years. And they've got the audacity to say things like they're paying people more this year because of their extraordinary efforts during the pandemic. This is a train wreck. And these corporations are really out of touch with the way people are feeling and rub the corporate bay salt.
Yeah, to say nothing, Bill, of being at odds with actual shareholder interests as well, in the interest of now talking up stakeholder interests. This is woke capitalism at its worst, and it's going to, I think you're right, probably blow back on them. Let me pivot to a related topic, Bill. There is, as you know very well, a blind spot on the part of a lot of these companies when it comes to communist China, with whom they're happy to do business, even though oppression and suppression, not just of voting, but of every freedom known to man, is endemic. How do they square their policies with respect to, you know, democratic processes like that's played out in Georgia on the one hand, and their willingness to be in bed with totalitarians like the Chinese Communist Party on the other?
Well, they can't square it, and they just hope people aren't paying attention, and that's why we need to call them out on it. The same time Major League Baseball was moving its All-Star game from Atlanta, they were signing a deal with Tencent in China. A very lucrative contract. And if you point out, China's got terrible voting rights in China. Longer conversation on that. And remember, Tencent's the same company that that came out against one of the NBA basketball coaches who spoke publicly against the takeover of Hong Kong, and he was banned from China, and he was erased from public discourse. So Major League Baseball is making common cause with the same people who have snuffed democracy out in Hong Kong.
And they're not alone, unfortunately. This is now true of, I would wager, probably virtually all, if not actually all, of those 100 CEOs companies that were convened by this Yale professor for the purposes of mau-mauing the American people and their elected representatives into submission.
Frank, look at the mantle that they're putting this under. They're saying they need to now come out to say democracy must be renewed, diversity is an asset, and the economy must work for all. Now, these are people who are running serious companies, and if they don't think that their businesses are providing a great product or service to the world, then they ought to be thinking about what they're real. Maybe ought to be thinking about another job.
Yeah, another line of work. Exactly right. Bill, your insights into all of that are so appreciated because it's born of personal experience with the considerations that CEOs are supposed to be weighing. Let me turn to another topic that I know has offended you as it has me and I suspect every other conservative in this country. Namely, John Boehner's new book, On the House, not too subtle reference to his serious drinking problem, which is actually evidenced in the cover of this new book. What's inside the covers of it is really alarming. I woke to an interview that he had with an NPR host this morning, National Public Radio. And I must tell you, I wanted to vomit. Talk a little bit about what John Boehner's record was when he was Speaker of the House and what he's now saying about the conservatives who voted for the Tea Party candidates in such prolific numbers that he was actually allowed to become the Speaker of the House, and how he's comporting himself now with respect to such people.
Well, John's case is really sad. He came into the House from Ohio in 1990 as a firebrand, fire-breathing conservative, and now he seems to have forgotten what conservative principles really are. He says things like, a leader without followers is just a man taking a walk. Well, then he refers to his background in sales and marketing, and the thing about making a sale is you're just listening. And then he goes on to say the ability to listen, well, there's no difference in politics, forgetting that some people go into politics because they believe things and they have principles and they think there are things that ought to be done that are the right thing for the country. He calls those people like Jim Jordan and Ted Cruz knuckleheads. He says all they're there is to create chaos. And then he goes on to say something extraordinary. He says they don't.
He doesn't have any idea of what they're for or something to that effect. I mean, this is outrageous.
Well, yeah, here's what he said. He says they don't say what they're for. Well, has he been listening?
They're very clear about that.
They're very clear what they're for.
One of the reasons we're proud of them. Yeah. So the
constitutional limited government, free elections, things, simple things like that.
Yeah. The basic premise of this piece, as far as I can tell, is the sort of lionizing of a guy boasting about himself, really, for having done what I call the growing in office phenomenon in Washington. As you say, he came to Washington as a conservative firebrand. He believed in conservative principles. He sought election to advance them. And in the course of his time, he grew in the eyes of the New York Times editorial board and Washington Post and so on, and completely lost his mooring and became actually, I think, a terrible adversary for, not a champion of, conservatives and their principles. And he's now carrying this out even further in this memoir. Much more to talk about on that score, and I hope we will have a chance to do so next week. Bill Walton, thank you for kicking off our Monday with this very important conversation. We always appreciate it. Come back to us next week, if you will. Next up, we will speak with Trevor Loudon about what the Chinese Communist Party has been doing here to our detriment, and more straight ahead. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Managed decline is a euphemism for the proposition that the United States is a terminally waning power and must accommodate itself to the inevitable rise of communist China and the realization of a global socialist reset favored by the so-called woke capitalists. Elites of both parties have long embraced this idea, and many of its adherents now hold senior positions in the Biden-Harris administration. Unfortunately, instead of managing our decline, this presidency seems determined to greatly accelerate it. The combined effect of Democrat-controlled executive and legislative branch efforts to shred our Constitution and the liberties it guarantees wage what Michelle Bachmann aptly calls war on the dollar, and embolden our enemies are evidence of an official determination to achieve our hypersonic decline and prompt national demise. It's not too late to reverse this seditious trajectory. We must, however, start doing so now. This is Frank Affney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we're joined by one of our regulars here at Secure Freedom Radio, I'm very pleased to say. His name is Trevor Loudon. He has done heroic work trying to warn his adopted country, the United States, about enemies foreign and domestic. Indeed, he is the author of an impressive book entitled The Enemy Within, and a film of the same name, and he is one of our go-to guys about what the actual insurrectionists are up to in this country, who they are, and who is enabling them, and it's always a privilege to be able to catch up with him to discuss all of that. Trevor, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you, sir.
Well, look, it's always great to be on. Thanks for having me, Frank.
So we're watching another day, or evening, more to the point, of rioting in Minneapolis at the hands of what I think is fair to describe as the usual suspects. It is a problem in its own right, of course, but perhaps a precursor of worse to come. Give us your read on what happened last night there and of what may be in the offing, depending on what happens with a highly monitored and worrisome trial there.
Well, when Derek Chauvin is on trial for the murder of George Floyd, and it's a very high chance he may get acquitted because there's evidence that Floyd died of not a knee on his neck or even on his back, but the amount of drugs he had in the system.
Fentanyl, specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fentanyl, which actually mainly comes from China, does it not? Isn't that ironic? But recently, in their talks between American officials and Chinese officials in Alaska, the Chinese were very, very aggressive, diverting attention from their own shocking human rights record by citing the race riots in America, the Black Lives Matter and the alleged suppression of Black Lives Matter by the American authorities. Well, unfortunately, the people who did the rioting, started the rioting in Minneapolis, the people who burnt Kenosha and many other cities, were a pro-Chinese communist group called the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. I have them on tape admitting that they organized the riots, talking of the joy they felt when Precinct 3 was burnt to the ground, and that the arson and rioting and violence was an integral part of the movement. So these same people now are getting ready to burn Minneapolis again and other cities as soon as the verdict comes down on Derek Chauvin. So this is these are pro-Chinese communists who have people living in China, who praise Mao and China in the pages of their magazines. So
this is a Chinese operation.
We certainly have seen, Trevor Loudon, the Chinese Communist Party and its fellow travelers and United Front groups capitalizing on this idea that America is a systemically racist place. And as you say, there is evidence that they're using another technique in the playbook of the Chinese unrestricted warfare strategy, namely civil unrest, as a means of trying to intensify problems within this country. These would seem to be the actions of a very hostile power, indeed actions of a state of war with the Chinese Communist Party. And yet this gets scarcely any attention at all, particularly in the focus on, you know, Black Lives Matter, the organization, and Antifa, to the extent that they're addressed at all. It's always seemingly just a homegrown operation. What do you make of all that?
Well, I think the American press is so in the tank for China that they're willing to cover up virtually any Chinese crime. Now, when John Ratcliffe, Trump's intelligence advisor, said last year that the Chinese Communist Party had compromised so many American congressmen that they could determine which legislation passes the U.S. Congress and which doesn't, that got about an hour's play. It was quickly suppressed, and most Americans never would have heard of it. But you know, it's beyond, we've proven beyond doubt that the people who started the riots last year are a pro-Chinese communist group responding to Chinese cues on a regular basis over things like COVID and foreign policy issues. So they started the riots in Minneapolis, they burnt several cities, and the rest of it was largely done by the Black Lives Matter movement, which is coordinated through Asians for Black Lives, which is a front for the Chinese Progressive Association of San Francisco, which works intimately with the Chinese consulate in San Francisco. So you have multiple Chinese connections to these riots. And given the urgency of defeating President Trump last year, it's not a stretch to call this a Chinese operation.
Mm-hmm. One of the other Chinese operations that you did some incredibly important forensic assessment of earlier this year, Trevor, was the use made by the Chinese over, I guess, several years of front organizations for the purpose of affecting the registration of voters in our country. And of course, there's a lot of talk at the moment about Georgia trying to correct some of the voting irregularities and fraud that took place in that last election. In part, it would seem, at the hands of those who have been trying to, you know, populate the voter pool with people who are aligned with the Chinese Communist Party. Talk us through all of that, if you would.
Well, look, the model for, see, the Chinese had networks in this country through last year doing massive voter registration in seven key states. And they claimed to have won six of them for Biden. They had black leaders organizing communities in Wisconsin. They had Detroit Action in Detroit, Lucha in Arizona, the New Georgia Project in Georgia, Pennsylvania Stands Up in Pennsylvania, etc., and New Florida Majority in Florida. Florida was the only one that didn't win. So what they did, these were organized by the same people that did Black Lives Matter. This came out of the Chinese Progressive Association in San Francisco, working through a group called Seed the Vote, which was communist run and coordinated these groups around the country. So they capitalized on the energy of the young black and Latino voters who'd been fired up by Black Lives Matter, told the Republican Party was racist, that Trump was a fascist, etc. But the model of this was an organization that had gone on for some time before that, since 2005. The New Virginia Majority, also run by Liberation Road, pro-Chinese communists, and they are the people who claim credit for flipping Virginia from a red state
to a blue state. And that how they did it, they used very sophisticated mapping. They knew every minority pocket of voters in the state, and they capitalized on that. And those maps were drawn up by a man called Steve McClure, a Liberation Road communist, a graduate of George Mason University Geography Department, who's been generating these maps on contract for the last 10 years out of the Wuhan University China Geography Department, using Chinese computers, Chinese workers, Chinese material to influence elections in America. The Chinese were involved in every way in this.
That's unbelievable. Trevor, the other thing that's going on at the moment, as you know, in Georgia, notably, is a concerted effort by corporations to insist that arrangements that actually do not suppress voting, but are designed to prevent illegal voting, be repealed by the state legislature and governor. These corporations don't seem to have any problem with what the Chinese Communist Party is up to with respect to, democracy, but even most fundamental rights of their citizens. Am I missing something here, or is there a willful blindness on the part of these corporations, many of whom are quite content to do business with the oppressive Chinese Communist Party?
Well, the leading element of this was the baseball league, you know, that runs baseball all over your country. And they said, we're going to pull a major game from Atlanta and give it to Denver, which, by the way, Colorado already has these laws in place, you know, the same ones that they're complaining about in Atlanta. But the baseball league is happy to play exhibition games in communist Cuba, and has major deals going with the Chinese. You know, they see China as a massive market for them. So they are putting, this is how China influences business, through business deals, through dangling business deals. So this is another example of Chinese pressure being exerted to corrupt the election process in the United States.
Right. And we're talking earlier
of war. I don't know what is.
Yeah, we were talking earlier in the program with Bill Walton about this tying into the so-called woke capitalism in American boardrooms these days. And it's insidious. It really is. And Trevor, you're calling this out, your clarity about who's involved and the extent to which that includes the Chinese Communist Party is indispensable to the work we all do. Thank you for it. Thank you for joining us when you can each week, often as possible, at least as far as I'm concerned. And thank you for keeping up the great quality of your work as well as the quantity of it. Next up, we'll talk with former CIA operative Sam Faddis about China's dream team in Washington and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back and joined by another, I'm proud to say, of our favorite people and regulars here at Secure Freedom Radio. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. He has served his country with great distinction in a variety of capacities in the uniform of the United States Army, in no uniform at all, as an undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, as an assistant attorney general out in Washington State, as a congressional candidate, and as an author of important works, including Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. Always a welcome guest here. Sam Faddis, it's good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I think Trevor Loudon has nicely teed up the thrust of what I wish to cover with you, which is the Chinese Communist Party is at war with this country, raising very serious concerns about the fact that quite a number of people, now serving in senior positions in the Biden-Harris administration. I think it's fair to say, including the president himself and the vice president, but a whole host of others have ties to or have been demonstrably compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. You've written about this at endmagazine.com and also at an important website, theaccountabilityinitiative.org. Talk a little bit about Xi's dream team, as you call it, and what that means, maybe at the 30,000-foot level, and then we'll get down into some of the particulars.
Well, what we're talking about is really a product of what the Chinese call the United Front, right, which is, it is a deliberate influence acquiring mechanism. And the Chinese have a long-term, very strategic plan, extremely well-funded. It operates all over the planet, and the whole idea is co-opt the elites of important countries, bend them to your will, get it so you've got the people in government and with influence in any particular country, the United States being first and foremost, who basically do your bidding, push your message, and make sure the policies are pursued that are favorable to the Chinese Communist Party. They've been at it for a very, very long time in the United States with huge success. And this manifests in a number of forms, but one of the most frequent things we're seeing with the Biden administration is that basically we have institutes of various types, typically all over the United States, that are studying China or involved with Chinese policy. But they're not studying China from the American viewpoint of, okay, what should we do about this problem? They're funded in very, very large amounts by the communist Chinese. And what these institutes do is push pro-CCP messages, pro-Chinese Communist Party messages, and oppose efforts that are directed against them. And out of these institutes now, we see just this flood of individuals being appointed to really, really senior positions in the Biden administration who've been taking Chinese communist money for a long time. So we're filling the ranks of the senior level of the Biden administration with people who, in effect, have been working for the Chinese for years.
Wow. Let's get down to some specifics. You had a piece in andmagazine.com the other day about the man who is now the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, a former Foreign Service officer and diplomat by the name of William Burns. You know the agency very well, Sam Faddis. If William Burns has been compromised by the Chinese intelligence agencies and Communist Party more generally, how big a problem would that be?
Well, it would be a pretty big problem. I mean, here's a guy who runs our premier human intelligence organization. And the number one target of the CIA should be, anyway, all day, every day at this point, Communist China. And the Communist Chinese espionage effort directed against us is enormous, probably unprecedented in size. And yet this guy he's coming directly out of exactly what I just described. He was affiliated with the Carnegie Endowment, and they are connected to, they have a specific center, the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, which is in China, and that's lashed up with Tsinghua University, which is directly involved in Chinese espionage. So this is a guy working for an outfit that is partnering with a communist Chinese entity involved in espionage against the United States. That's what that boils down to. That's the guy who is now the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, somebody who has been, in fact, in bed with Chinese espionage efforts. And by the way, through other connections here, United Front activities. He's been in partnership with the enemy for years, and now he's running the organization that's supposed to be penetrating those efforts.
This would, in normal times, be disqualifying, I would think. And, you know, as you've pointed out on this program and elsewhere, Sam Faddis, based on your own personal experience with the tradecraft of intelligence, set in train, presumably, a very serious damage assessment of what an individual with these kinds of shall we say, proclivities and record could do or may be doing to our intelligence capabilities. But even at a sort of overt level, one thing that I must tell you I'm greatly worried about is even if he's not actually sabotaging our intelligence, he may be deflecting the kind of work that it should be doing against this main enemy. This enemy that, as Trevor Loudon was just saying, is at war with us, to others, perhaps the Russians or who knows who all else, domestic terrorists, no less. How serious a problem does that represent, do you think?
Well, it's a huge problem. I mean, even if you're not talking about the guy compromising specific operations, which I'm not ruling out, but let's assume we're not. Clearly, his worldview and his view of the threats and his view of our policies has nothing to do with where we should be. I mean, all of these guys and all these institutes that we're talking about, broad brush, read what they write, read what they say, and look at what the institutes and various institutes and centers say. It's straight out of Xi Jinping's playbook. If you're investigating Chinese spies in America, it's a product of racism. America has problems with systemic racism. Any criticism of the communist Chinese, non-existent. Uyghur concentration camps don't exist for any of these centers or institutes. Forced organ harvesting doesn't exist. China is a shining model for the rest of the world that we should emulate. That's the broad brush message. This is straight out. It's being dictated from Beijing. At a minimum, that's the message. That's the worldview of all of these individuals. Really terrifying stuff.
And the potential for damage is even more so. Let me ask you about another individual that I gather will be featured prominently shortly on the accountabilityinitiative.org site, Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, who comported himself rather appallingly in the face of Chinese attacks on this country in the course of a diplomatic parley in Alaska recently.
Well, I mean, Blinken comes out of this same milieu, right? A couple of things that Blinken in particular highlights is that the institute that he's coming from is another one of, actually, there are several of these that are under investigation by the Department of Education because despite U.S. law mandating that they disclose when they take foreign money, what it turns out is that these institutions have not been doing that to the tune of tens or sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars of money coming in from China. And despite the legal requirement, they have been just refusing to, they just don't file that paperwork. And in fact, when the Department of Education
demands that they Biden Center, right?
Yeah, at the Biden Center of the University of Pennsylvania, in his case, where they've got $22 million in CCP money that they won't tell you where it came from and exactly who gave it to them. And
for what purpose,
real
presumably?
Part, exactly, why won't you tell us? And when the Department of Education demands they tell them, they resist the effort to disclose this. That ought to really make the hair on everybody's neck stand up.
No, and they're getting away with not disclosing it. This is true of so much of what the Biden team is up to. Sam Faddis, I wanted to talk with you about a piece that goes back to something we talked about with Rick Berman at the beginning of the program. You entitled it, Does the CCP Own the Biden Administration? By drilling down on the man who's now the number three person in the Pentagon, Colin Kyle. But that will be for next week, hopefully. Thank you for your time today, my friend, and for the extraordinary work you're doing as part of your continuing service to our country at AND Magazine and the accountabilityinitiative.org and so much more. I know you'll keep it up, and I know you'll come back to us again next week. In the meantime, stay well. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.